This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
And good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, and brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 7:06. On this Thursday morning, January 9th, 2025. It's so nice to have you along. Coming up in this half hour, we're going to talk to our friend Ruth Khanna from the Wisconsin Examiner a bit about the opening of the legislative session, a bit about the spring election races for state superintendent and for a seat on the state Supreme Court. She wrote a bit about what the conservative Supreme Court candidate Brad Schimmel had to say about the January 6th defendants. We'll also talk about her book, Milked, which you've heard me talk about repeatedly, about the role of migrant workers on Wisconsin dairy farms, and she has an update on that. Then in our second hour, we will be talking both to the Assembly Democratic leader, Greta Neubauer, and to new state senator, Sarah Kieski. It'll be part of a new segment that we do on Thursdays where we'll try to talk to one senator and one assembly rep about what's happening under the Capitol Dome on that particular week so that you know what your legislators are up to in Madison. But first, before we get to all that, meteorologist Brittany Merlot joins us now, where, again, we're here in the single digits in many places across Wisconsin. Not much for snow. And Rob from Tigerton asks, does our snow queen Brittany have some awesome news for snow on Sunday? Well, I mean, no pressure there, Brittany. What you got?
I love that Greg is shaking his head. He's like, no, please, no more. But yes, we've got two shots of some light snowfall. Sunday looks much better than the one moving in tonight and through early tomorrow morning. So what we've got going on here is high pressure still taking place. Clear and cold conditions this morning. Temperatures range from 2 below in Oconto to 16 degrees is the warmest temperature. And that's actually in Superior and Ashland. So they're hanging on to the warmth with a little bit of wind movement there. Otherwise, we are looking at clouds increasing throughout the day. So some sunshine to start, becoming cloudy and warmer. Highs will make it to the mid-20s today out ahead of this system that's moving in. So what this system is actually a part of the big one that's heading down to the south, bringing plenty of ice and snowfall from Dallas all the way to Nashville. But here for us, we're just looking at about a trace to a half an inch of snowfall. So this will push in overnight tonight, mainly around midnight. But of course, far northwest areas could see this after 6 o'clock this evening. So that'll continue overnight. We could be waking up to some slippery spots in the morning, but a few flurries flying will wind down by the afternoon. We'll continue to stay in those mid-20s. And then, of course, some sunshine for Saturday, but we do have another system headed our way for Sunday, and that could bring a widespread 1 to 3 inches, with places in the north woods looking at 2 to 4.
Well, it's not 2 to 4 feet, but, you know, at this point, we're going to take what we can get, right?
Exactly.
Okay. From Robin Tigerton, who says, wait a minute, I want to get it, put it in the right order. He gives us today's report in multiple parts on YouTube. Good morning from Tigerton. It's clear and 2 above. At least the winds are light. Yeah. Yesterday, he went to Shawano for a doctor's appointment for his ears. He took some pictures on the way home around sunset time. And we mentioned Van Halen's 1984 album. And when he thinks of Jump, he still jams to that song today. As do we all, Rob. And he also adds prayers to the people in the Los Angeles area from the fire. And as we mentioned earlier, he is hoping for some snow on Sunday. So, Rob, we always appreciate those daily reports.
Nice. Those fires out west are so, so scary. Those Santa Ana winds, like, this is the season for them. And then they're just pushing with that 60 mile per hour winds and that dry air coming off the inland area. It's scary stuff out there.
It really is. I mean, the and again, this is a place that's used to fires, but when you now you add an honest to goodness wind storm on top of it, it just makes the tragedy so much more widespread. Brittany, thanks. We will get that weekend forecast from you tomorrow. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
All right. Remember, along the way, if you'd like to join us, we are always here for you with your calls and texts, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You can use the Civic Media app to call or text the show, or you can put a comment on Facebook or YouTube. That would be the Up North News YouTube page, the Up North News Facebook page, or the Civic Media Facebook page. Let's bring in Ruth Conniff, editor-in-chief of the Wisconsin Examiner, also author of the book Milked, about dairy farming in Wisconsin with migrant labor. We'll talk more about that in a little bit, but first let's talk about what all is getting going in Madison, from the legislature to election races. Ruth Conniff, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thanks.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Nice to see you. And again, for folks who aren't reading it regularly, get yourself over to WisconsinExaminer.com and read what this honest-to-God all-star staff writes every day that you work with. And we appreciate all you do. Holiday break's over.
Yeah.
In a big way. Boy, between the legislature and elections, you guys have to shake off the holiday rust real quick, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I think it's nice to be back with the whole staff, and we are ready for the new year. Mm-hmm. But it was nice to take a little slow time during the holidays.
So what caught my eye was, you know, you write editorial columns from time to time, as I do for UpNorthNewsWI.com, and you noted that there's going to be this state Supreme Court race, and we know that Dane County Judge Susan Crawford is running, as is Scott Walker's former Attorney General Brad Schimmel. And with the January 6th, day of infamy around us, something caught your ear about what Brad Schimmel had to say about the January 6th defendants that you felt compelled to write about. Do you want to sum that up for us?
Yeah, I wrote a column on January 6th in which I considered Schimmel's appearance on the Vicki McKenna Show, where he really, you know, he did a full Trump, and he talked about how the January 6th defendants never got a fair shake. I mean, people who were put in jail and, you know, committed violent acts, attacked Capitol police officers. And his justification for that, I thought, was particularly interesting, coming from somebody who wants to sit on the state Supreme Court, because he basically said our system of justice doesn't work, that prosecuting these folks, you know, who beat police officers with flagpoles, who came into the Capitol and defecated there, who were looking to kill members of Congress, that they couldn't get a fair shake because they were tried in Washington, D.C., which he said is a notoriously liberal place, and therefore would necessarily draw a liberal jury pool. And so really, not only was he, you know, jumping on board with a lot of Republicans who were initially shocked and horrified by the scenes of January 6th that we all saw unfold, but, you know, took it a step further and basically said our system of justice doesn't work, and that these people, you know, not just that he did say they were, it was political that they were prosecuted at all and sort of a stunt by the Democrats, but he even went a step further and said that our court system can't be relied on, that the results can't be relied on if they're in Washington. And I just think that that is so outrageous, coming from someone who claims that he's going to be a fair and impartial judge, and also who attacks other people who have run for the state Supreme Court in Wisconsin for somehow being political. Of course, only the Democratic supported candidates, only the liberals are political in his view, and the conservatives are not. But here's a guy who's been deeply, deeply partisan for his entire career, who, as we now know because of a New York Times investigation, was part of a widespread effort, a nationwide effort by Christian conservative lawyers to overturn Roe and to, you know, promote cases that could challenge Roe and get the, you know, Donald Trump appointees on the Supreme Court to agree with them that precedent didn't apply, long before anyone was prepared for that. You know, starting in 2016, Schimmel and his staff, especially Mika Seelen, who you know, worked with him at the time at the Department of Justice, were going to conferences and participating in discussions of how to get rid of Roe v. Wade. So, you know, the whole idea that this guy is neutral is ridiculous. But this I thought was particularly egregious, this, you know, getting on board with the idea that the January 6th defendants should never have been prosecuted in the first place and couldn't have been fairly tried.
And essentially what he's saying is that he believes the insurrectionists deserve special treatment rather than being treated as any other criminal would, who would, you know, try to break into the U.S. Capitol and you know, the mayhem that was caused, that there should be something special about them instead. He's going to have to talk about that. He's going to be asked about the, you know, the efforts that led to the overturning of Roe. And as Joe Zepecki mentioned in our last hour, of course, under Schimmel, we had the long delays in processing rape kits. So there is definitely a record that he will be asked about repeatedly, I would assume, between now and April 1st.
Yeah, I think, you know, as people tune in, of course, state Supreme Court races, which used to be sleepy affairs, are really high stakes in Wisconsin now. But I think people, you know, are just beginning to even think about this race.
Yeah, and look, there's going to be plenty to talk about with Judge Crawford as well, with Act 10. But here's my own personal peeve about this, is that state Supreme Court races and attorneys general races almost always turn into these law and order things, as if justices and attorney generals are in court every day deciding that they will or will not prosecute murderers, when that really distorts the real role of these positions. And the role of a Supreme Court justice has very little to do with day-to-day prosecution of crime. But I imagine we're going to get a lot of that talk again with this race, Ruth.
Yes, and it's very disingenuous, because a lot of times the lobby groups that put up ads that focus on law and order have completely different interests before the court. They want deregulation. I mean, we saw that as money became such a huge part of our state Supreme Court races, and it looks like we are now on track to break all records for this latest race. You know, it's an arms race among outside groups pouring money into each of these candidates. And you know, when Michael Gableman was running, when things really got bad in Wisconsin, when we made the national news because it was such a dirty campaign, pouring money into dishonest ads that smeared his opponent, Louis Butler, the first African-American justice who he unseated to win that race, that was when the floodgates opened the widest that so far, when we became the highest spending state in the nation on these races. And a lot of the ads focused specifically on law and order. There was a Willie Horton type ad accusing Butler of, you know, setting violent criminals free when he was a public defender. But the people behind those ads were school choice lobbyists, and they were lobbyists for deregulation of industry. They didn't care about law and order. They just used it in the race.
Exactly. Same way that we saw in the presidential race, attacking Greenland and the Panama Canal have nothing to do with the price of eggs and the other things you heard about during the campaign. We're talking to Ruth Conniff, the editor-in-chief of the Wisconsin Examiner. We're going to pause here and continue our visit, and then we will talk with Assembly Democratic Leader Greta Neubauer and new State Senator Sarah Kieske. This is Up North News Radio, live from Chippewa Falls on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can sign up for our newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. We'll be back in a bit.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Singer Joan Baez is 84 years old today. Welcome back to Up North News Radio at 7:22 on this Thursday morning. January 9th, the Bucks beat the San Antonio Spurs last night 121-105. Damian Lillard had 26 points, Giannis 25, Brooke Lopez 22. They will play again tomorrow night in Orlando. And the Badger men's basketball team is going to be playing the Minnesota Gophers tomorrow. Coverage begins at 5 o'clock on Civic Media stations in Amory, Wisconsin Rapids, Racine, Kenosha, Richland Center, and the Civic Media app. Head over to civicmedia.us to learn more. We're visiting with Ruth Conniff from the Wisconsin Examiner this morning, and we've been talking about the state Supreme Court race. You can find her coverage of that and everything else her team does at wisconsinexaminer.com. Let me touch briefly on the race for state superintendent, because there will now be three candidates in that race. There's the incumbent state superintendent, Jill Underley. There is also going to be Jeff Wright, who is also a progressive, as is Superintendent Underley. And then there is Brittany Kinzer, who has described herself, I believe, as a blue dog Democrat. It's a little unusual to have three people in the race like this, so there will be a primary on February 18th to find out the top two vote getters that go on April 1st. It just seems like an unusual circumstance, Ruth, to have three either Democrats or progressives or lean progressive people in there. Does that tell us anything about what we can expect from this race between now and February 18th, at least?
Well, I would just like to say that there are not three progressives in this race.
There you go. And that deals with the description of blue dog Democrat, which I have taken issue with for many years now, shall we say.
Yeah, blue dog Democrat, I mean, can mean a lot of things, including wanting to eliminate the ACA. But, you know, more importantly, the candidate who's describing herself as a blue dog Democrat has been a big booster of school choice for a long time. And in Wisconsin, the existential issue for public schools is school privatization and the increasing degree to which we are trying to fund two school systems, one public and one private. She is a big advocate for the expansion of the private schools that receive public funds. So I would say that separates her, you know, pretty distinctly from Underley and from Wright. Wright's challenge to Underley kind of came out of nowhere at first. You know, the state Democratic Party has supported Underley. Evers, I went to his New Year's press conference where he was notably tepid in his description of Underley and refused to support anybody in the race. So there is some love lost there, apparently. And I think it has to do with the change in reading scores and the way that the state measures them and the fact that DPI went in a direction that Evers himself did not agree with. And, you know, I think maybe there was some lack of communication between the governor and the superintendent. So, you know, there's some rumbling there. I think Underley is still the favorite. She's the incumbent. People know who she is. Jeff Wright is a superintendent from Sauk Prairie. People don't know a whole lot about him. And I don't think that we're about to elect a school choice superintendent, but, you know, it could happen in Wisconsin, especially when you've got, you know, the race splitting three ways. By February, though, it seems unlikely that Brittany Kinzer or Jeff Wright is going to have enough name recognition, but we don't know.
No, especially when you've got also that race for state Supreme Court and now quite likely a constitutional amendment for voter ID that's being discussed in the legislature this week. Before I run out of time, though, I want to ask you to follow up on your amazing book, Milked, about Mexican laborers across Wisconsin dairy farms and the farmers who support them, including farmers who frankly have and probably did again vote for Donald Trump. It's such a fascinating, I'll use the word disconnect, but not in an entirely negative way. I think you really have to read more of Ruth's writing to get it. But I wanted to follow up on it, and you say you're going to be making another trip down to Mexico. The kind of you were living down there for a time that kind of prompted this book in the first place.
Yeah, when I went to Mexico for a year with my family, I read an article in the Wisconsin State Journal, Wisconsin Watch story, that was about a family that was leaving during the Trump administration. They didn't want to, you know, have their family separated. Their kids were born in this country and they were afraid of being deported. So I followed that family in Mexico. I went and interviewed them there and I interviewed a bunch of other farmers and workers. And I just developed this book about this relationship because it is better known now. It was not well known then that 70% of the workforce on Wisconsin dairy farms, I say 80% in my book, it's somewhere between 60 and 90, but 70, according to the UW's latest survey, are immigrants. There is no such thing as a year-round visa for low-skilled farm work. So immigrant workforce on Wisconsin dairy farms is undocumented. And at the same time, you know, it is a very Republican, very Trump voting part of the state where these farms are. And so it is an interesting relationship. It's a years long relationship. And, you know, I talk about in my book sort of the global economic forces that threw these two groups of rural people together, and they have found they have something in common. They have a similar agrarian past, and they are, you know, really hardworking folks who are surviving, doing farm work, working side by side. And now we have this threat of mass deportation. So I am going to go on a trip with the farmers to Mexico through this nonprofit group, Puentes Bridges, that takes a group of farmers every year to meet the families of their workers in southern Mexico. And they see the homes and businesses that their workers have built with the money they made milking cows up here. So I'm going to go on the trip at the end of this month. I have done some reporting from Western Wisconsin that I hope is coming out this week or early next week, sort of about how people continue to feel pretty far away from all that national political rhetoric, that a lot of these workers have taken on so much risk to get here and so much financial debt to, you know, pay for an illegal border crossing, that the political rhetoric does not seem like the scariest thing they've faced. And so in a lot of ways, both the farmers and the workers are sort of just hoping to get through, and that the mass deportation threat is not going to touch rural Wisconsin.
But although I certainly fear those farmers will be among a chorus of voices around the country that said, wait, I thought he was going to get rid of the bad immigrants. I like my workers. And I think some of them are in for a rude awakening, but Ruth will continue to follow this, write about it at the Wisconsin Examiner, wisconsinexaminer.com, and get her book milked as well to learn much more about the issue. Ruth Conniff, it's so great to see you. Thank you again for the visit. Look forward to talking to members of your team again in the new year. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Pat.
All right. Nice to have you here. When we come back, we'll talk to new state senator Sarah Kieske, and we will also talk to Assembly Democratic leader Greta Neubauer as a new session of the Wisconsin legislature gets underway. All that coming up in just a bit, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
A couple of light years ago, heading straight for a fall.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
AJ McLean of the Backstreet Boys is 47 today. You can get our history lesson every morning, Monday through Friday at 6:50 here on Up North News Radio. Tomorrow on the program, we would normally talk to Kia Vakil, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom. Regular listeners know that he's based in Los Angeles, and things are very crazy there right now and tragic. And Kia is among those who has had to evacuate, so Kia will not be able to join us tomorrow. A couple of our other Courier Newsroom colleagues will be joining me, including Isabel Swasson from Iowa Starting Line, who writes for the Courier Newsroom national team. And also my colleague in North Carolina, Billy Ball, from the Cardinal and Pine. And we've talked briefly about this, but I'm going to ask Billy more about how the North Carolina Supreme Court election may be on the verge of getting hijacked by conservatives and a Trump-appointed judge who may be poised to throw out tens of thousands of legal votes on a technicality so that the conservative candidate could win a seat on the North Carolina Supreme Court, a real, true case of election theft in the making. And we'll talk about that tomorrow morning at 6:30 here on Up North News Radio. But right now, I'm very thrilled to be joined by the Assembly Democratic leader, Greta Neubauer of the Racine area, and brand new state senator, Sarah Kieske of Lodi. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning.
So nice to have both of you here. We're going to spend a lot of our Thursdays, we hope, talking to a pair of legislators, one from the Senate, one from the Assembly. It's my way of bridging the divide, not between Republican and Democrat, but between Senate and Assembly. Because as we know, and Greta, you've been in the legislature long enough to know that sometimes caucuses of the same party between the Assembly and the Senate could use a little bridging now and then, a little more togetherness, wouldn't you say?
Oh, we're getting along great, Pat.
It's day four.
We're ready to go.
How many times I got accused of having senitude by Assembly members? It's a word down there in the Capitol, believe me.
Watch out, Sarah. Watch out.
Yep. That's right.
Things to know.
Sarah, congratulations on your win. It was fun talking to you a couple of times as a candidate. How are things so far this first week?
Well, thanks so much for having me on here. I'm so excited. I am over the moon. It's really hard to describe how exciting this is, how grateful I am to be here, how eager I am to get to work, and how proud I am to be representing my district.
And Representative Neubauer, do you have a caucus that now has a majority of new members?
Yes, we do. 23 new members, 22 continuing members.
That's really something. But that's got to be exciting in its own way for the veterans, as you would say, to see all of these new faces, all of this new blood. It's not that you don't miss the folks who aren't there anymore, but this has got to be kind of a rush for you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, we, of course, had some great folks who chose to retire this year, went on to run for other things. And we have 23 new people who are so excited to be in the legislature. They worked really hard in primaries, in tough purple districts, in many cases, to get here. They come from all parts of the state. They have diverse professional, personal backgrounds, bring great experience, and we're just thrilled to have them joining, especially in a new era where the margins have tightened, right, between Democrats and Republicans in the Assembly and Senate, and we're really hoping for a shift in the way things work in the Capitol.
Well, that would sure be nice, but that was certainly not the rhetoric that we heard from Speaker Robin Voss and from Senate Republican Leader Devin Lemahieu, whose opening speeches were extremely partisan in my view. But I think they're trying to help unify a smaller Republican majority. But as I understand correctly, Leader Neubauer, even though the Republicans no longer have near supermajorities in the Assembly and in the Senate, am I hearing right that they're trying to basically give themselves supermajorities on committees?
Yes. So they removed a number of committee positions for Assembly Democrats going into this year. That was, of course, extremely disappointing because we picked up 10 seats and somehow have less spots on most of the important committees going into this year. Speaker Voss would like things to stay the same. He's enjoyed the power that he's had under the gerrymander, and I think he is going to continue to act like he has 2/3 almost of the chamber until he can't. Yeah. And I do think that his members are going to start pushing back if they refuse to take up popular policy and if they keep acting like they don't need to listen to voters from both sides of the aisle.
Right. And that no doubt led to what the governor proposed at the start of the week with citizen initiative and referendum for constitutional amendments. And we may get back to that in this segment. But Senator Kieske, let me ask you a bit about your own goals, priorities, expectations. Now that, the rush of the inauguration is past, what is it that you'd like to get down to work and do?
Well, I'll say that after working so hard to get elected, it has been a gap of time, these 2 months, where I've just been so eager to get in and to get to work. And so I couldn't be more excited to have our first session day yesterday. And I will continue to advocate for the things that have been my priorities along the campaign trail, including K-12, public education, our rural communities, and of course, mental health, because I'm a mental health provider, and that's been a primary focus of mine for my whole adult life. I've been honored to be put on the committees for mental health, substance abuse, and families, for agriculture, and for education. And so my goal is to be a really active member on each of those committees, to learn all I can, and to be a voice of hopefully some compromise, some change, and some advocacy for things that we really need to see happen and that we heard at each of the doors. Oftentimes, one of these issues was commonplace when I worked all across the district.
I was going to say, it wasn't just, if you weren't hearing about a specific issue, you were hearing the specific message of working together better, I'm sure.
Oh, constantly. I mean, one of the things that was pivotal for people that wanted to vote, they wanted to see a change. They wanted to see people work together. They wanted to see us get things done. And I'll be honest, that's one of the things that, I've lived my life being very proactive. And I've been a busy person. I have 6 kids. I've managed jobs, multiple jobs at the same time. And so all I want to do is be productive. And it's been disappointing a bit to see some of the barriers to that productivity, starting out even including like the schedule that we were supposed to vote in. I voted against because we don't work nearly enough in the second year of our term because of the upcoming elections each 2 years. And so I'm hopeful, again, to get to work and to be listening to and fulfilling my obligation to my constituents, which is work hard, work together, get things done.
Exactly. The working hard part appeared to be missing from that schedule, Representative Neubauer, that so many Democrats did vote against it because we have joked in past years, in 2024, 2022, 2020, about Republicans putting the legislature on roughly a 9-month paid vacation. They just went ahead and baked that into the calendar for 2026, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have a member who has served in the assembly for quite some time, Chris Nicky, who reminded us that they used to legislate into May. And yeah. Since I've been here, it's pretty much February. We're done with our work in the Capitol and everybody is back home campaigning. And really, that's not how the legislature is supposed to work. We're paid full time for 2 years. And often at the end of session in February, we're rushing through over 100 bills, not able to really give them real consideration. And of course, there are new challenges that come up. So we should work harder. We should work more days. We should work longer into the second year. We got elected to do a job and we should do it.
Yeah, because again, it's a full time salary, and yet from the cuts that we played in our last hour, from Representative Snodgrass, from Senator Smith, from Senator Royes, what they chose to work on for day 2 and day 3 was ramming through this constitutional amendment on voter ID. So we already heard a couple of sound bites about it, Representative Neubauer, but I want you to weigh in as well that of all the things that Republicans could have worked on, this was one of the first things on the docket.
Yeah, you know, I'll note, Sarah just mentioned, there are a lot of issues that came up on the campaign trail. I knocked on doors in my own district and knocked on doors in every competitive assembly district over the last year. And you know what I didn't hear one time? I want you to take that state law on voter ID and put that into the Wisconsin Constitution. I heard about addressing costs for working families, about education, the environment, supporting our kids and our elderly folks, right? There are a lot of important issues that the people of Wisconsin have asked us to address. This is just not one of them.
No, and I understand the timeline. They want to rush this through and get this on the April ballot when there's also the state Supreme Court election, the state superintendent election, and everything else. But again, it just says so much about the priorities. Senator Kieske, let me ask you, and it's one thing to talk to leadership, and you understand why leadership, sets the agendas that they set. But then there's the rank and file members, and I wonder if already in these early phases, have you struck up some conversations, I won't say friendships because it's still early, but some conversations with some of your Republican colleagues that you think might lead to some of these, bipartisan initiatives?
Well, let me say I have introduced myself to them and extended a hand. I also had a meeting with the assembly member that is a Republican in my district, along with, of course, knowing the other two assembly members that are Democrats and working well with them. His name is Tony Kurtz, and we had a meeting in my office. Again, really wanting to start off with the foot of bipartisanship, asking that he and I can work together. We have the same constituents. We want to do good work. I believe that that's why he's in the legislature too. And so I ask that whatever his priorities are, share them with me. Let's make sure that we work together as much as we possibly can. I understand we will disagree on some things, but we certainly can agree on much more than we disagree on. And my hope is that he takes me at my word and will work really hard to keep our offices in connection.
You've certainly made the effort, and Greta, I know the same happens over on the assembly side, but it feels different. You know, it does not feel as congenial as it was in days gone by. I'm not asking you to psychoanalyze, some of your colleagues, but I think you share that assessment that there's definitely room for improvement in terms of improved relations between across the aisle, shall we say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the reality is that we just picked up a lot of seats, right? We got fair maps in Wisconsin, which many of us have been working on for a decade. And it changed things in the legislature. We've got a lot more people who are in very competitive districts, both Democrats and Republicans, who have to look over both shoulders, be responsive to their constituents. Republicans aren't really happy about this new reality. I hope that they will settle in. I hope that they will remember that they are sent here by their constituents to work hard on their behalf and to get things done, right, to address the pressing challenges facing the state of Wisconsin. But I think everyone is getting used to a new status quo of a closer legislature, a more accountable legislature, and not everybody's happy about that.
No, but, there are things that you're going to have to jump into with the budget. There's certainly going to be discussion about a tax cut, how you tailor it exactly to the middle class. Maybe that can be a win-win. Maybe not so much Badger Care, Medicaid expansion, but maybe at least postpartum expansion.
One would hope.
Maybe special education funding, that disparity between voucher schools and public schools. What we're trying to let people know is there's definitely room there for some win-wins if some more of your colleagues are willing to not march in lockstep.
Absolutely. And we've seen that, right? We've seen those Republican members out on the campaign trail talking about those same issues. My opponent had postpartum on a mailer. So I hope that those members will push back against their leadership and will make clear that their constituents want them to pass popular policy that will improve their lives.
Well, keep the welcome mat out for them, that they're always welcome to talk with you and potentially vote with you on things that, again, the vast majority of Wisconsinites want. Democratic leader Greta Neubauer from the Assembly, new state senator Sarah Kieske. Thank you both so much. Great to talk to you. Take care now.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, we'll wrap things up with Luke Mathers here on Up North News Radio next.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
She was looking kind of dumb with a finger and a thumb in the shape of an L on her forehead. Well, the years start coming and they don't stop 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 coming and they don't.
Luke Mathers is here, but there's actually a story by Greg Bach about this particular version of a Smash Mouth song.
So at the club,
by the way, this goes on for 10 minutes, in case you're wondering. Yeah.
When at the club, when we want to be done with the evening because people are standing around talking and not drinking and buying things and keeping our lights on, please come to the Laughing Tap. And when we want to close down shop because we're not a 2 a.m. bar, we'll play this song and it'll play for about a minute and a half, and people will be like, and then they'll be like, What is this?
You can bring it back up. Yeah.
He's still going.
Yeah, exactly. At some point, it drives you away. But anyway.
Yeah.
It takes a full 90 seconds for the patrons at the Laughing Tap
because,
to recognize that.
Because they're sitting there with their drinks and they're talking to their friends. Yeah. And they're bopping their heads. And then the repetition starts to bore into their ear hole, and then they're like, we got to go right now. And then I start turning up louder and louder and louder.
By the way, all this in honor of Steve Harwell from Smash Mouth, the late Steve Harwell, who was born this day in 1967. Mr. Mathers, Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year, Mr. Krylo. Happy New Year, Mr. Bach. Doing well. I saw Smash Mouth Bratfest. Dane County's, you know, the I believe world's largest Bratfest yes. over Memorial Day weekend a number of years back, and it was an interesting show. I believe he was like yelling.
Yeah, that's what happened towards the end. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Again, yeah. That's, you know, when you die at age 56 from being a rock and roll star, there's adventure along the path here. Let's see. We've got a few comments that I wanted to share. This one from Greg. Yay, Greg W. Yay, Bucks won finally, which is going to make Mr. Mathers happy here. Two in a row.
Yeah, I was a little bummed that, yeah, it was two in a row. I was a little bummed that it was an 8:30 p.m. start last night. I'm not a big fan of the late. They were home too. They weren't even on the West Coast.
I know, but it's TV. You gotta do what TV wants. Greg also added on there. Pat and Greg, you both are looking mighty fine this morning from this blind guy's perspective.
Okay? Thanks, Greg.
Thanks. Brian on Facebook writes, "No bias here from former Dem legislator Pat Kreitlow." Shh, Brian, don't out me. Nobody else knows that I was a former Democratic legislator. You caught me. You cracked the code on this. And also from Eric and Tosa on the text line about Joe Sopecki earlier saying, please stop saying voters aren't responsible for this. If we keep letting the people who elected this guy off the hook, we're never going to evolve. And on it goes about the voters. But Luke, you and I know we've talked to enough elected officials and people in Joe Sopecki's position that it's the candidates who are not going to gain any ground by saying, well, the voters are dumb or something like that. You've got to win the votes back, and calling voters dumb doesn't tend to win them back. Now, that's not to say that the voters can't be called to account. I would get yelled at a lot at the TV station for yelling at people. You might find that hard to believe, Luke, but I used to yell at people a lot.
People on the television not talking about things I know.
And my response was always, if you don't want to be yelled at for doing something stupid, don't do something stupid. Yeah. There, so I can have that conversation from time to time, but really, you know, Luke, from our standpoint at Civic Media, it's like, look, we could sit here all day and go, oh, you guys are dummies who voted this way. It's like, no, we've got to talk about the issues in the here and now.
We absolutely have to be talking about the issues. It is strange, though, Pat, because it seems that some people can get away with calling voters dumb. Or there's a separate set of rules,
yes,
for depending on which voters you're talking about. Because if Democrats talked about the middle-of-the-road moderate voters or conservative voters, the way that conservatives and Republican elected officials talk about Democratic voters, you would see people like lighting their hair on fire, because it is insane the double standard that exists, the way that Republican lawmakers can use cities like Milwaukee or New York or LA as political dog whistles to indicate one thing, where you all of a sudden see a different set of rules that everybody else has to deal.
And that's what I think is important. What you're doing and what we're doing is you point out the double standard. We don't say, well, let's just call all rural people, you know, dumb. It's like, no. How about if we point out how wrong it is to call Milwaukee dumb or wrong? And especially
if you're
using it as coded language. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. And so it's the fact that we're all dealing with different political verbiage and how we go forward talking to people in this really highly siloed media landscape.
Right.
But it is important, I think, to be talking to everybody and meeting them where they are. And so that does look differently depending on who you're talking to. And there's different standards when it comes to who's doing the talking.
Right. So if you can have a good back and forth with folks, then you're going to attract people from all parts of the spectrum to listen to you. Now, Tony notes on YouTube, it is hard to hold voters accountable when the elections are about different issues than what the politicians actually do. But again, that's what we're talking about here. We're not going to focus all day on President Trump trying to acquire Greenland. We're going to point out that he's talking about that because he's not taking action on the price of groceries and everything else, which is part of what, you know, part of what we want to do on all of these shows that Mr. Mathers arranges for us, except that he appears to be stuck in traffic right now. But hopefully they let
I'm safe in a parking lot. The car isn't parked. Don't worry.
Okay.
Okay. Everybody's circling back. It's a week of circling back, and I could not be in a studio.
Okay. So you can confirm the keys to the building still work for you.
That's
okay,
correct.
they let you in. That's the important part. Mr. Mathers, thank you. Have a great
Always
day.
Always a pleasure. You
Mr.
too.
Bach is back in 2 hours for Matt and Air on Air, and thanks to all of you for joining us for Up North.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.